Jeff Epps is the greatest player that's ever played in Florida.
This Nugget's pink, and I hate it.
About to go hard for 50 minutes.
You can't say stuff like this on podcast, all right?
Hello and welcome to the Alligator Sports Podcast. This is the show for Friday, November 6, 2009. I'm your host, Adam Berry, and joining me today, two football writers looking forward to gouging each other's eyes out. We got Bobby Colovi.
How's it going?
And Phil Kegler.
Good morning, America.
And as I mentioned in the opening segment there, we got a lot to talk about with the eye gouging done by Brandon Spikes. We're going to say eye gouging at least 500 times on this show, as it's been the only way to describe the Brandon Spikes incident, apparently. We're also going to preview the Vanderbilt game, talk about some of Urban Meyer's comments that may or may not have been reviewed by the SEC. We're going to talk about our Heisman watch and then make our Gator guarantees at the end of the show. Let's start off with the Brandon Spikes talk. Just go ahead and give an update on that, what happened this week since we had our last podcast.
Adam, are you talking about the Brandon Spikes eye gouging?
I am talking about the eye gouging of Georgia running back Washaun Ely, whose eyes were gouged.
I wish we had a pitch counter. That way we could actually keep track of how many times you said it.
Yeah.
And we had posted with the podcast.
I want a listener to do that, actually. Just keep a tally.
Well, he didn't actually gouge his eyes. That's the one thing we've learned. Ely said that he did not actually reach in and get him.
His eyes were closed.
Yeah, his eyes were closed.
Protective.
He didn't even know that there's hands by his face. But it was originally half a game, yeah. And then I guess Brandon Spikes was affected by all the media attention he was getting, all the negative publicity, and he went to Urban and Brandon's and Charlie Strong and asked if he could miss the rest of the game so he wasn't a negative influence on his teammates, and they didn't. All the attention wasn't on him.
All right, I'm gonna be honest. I don't believe that at all.
I do.
I
really?
Too,
yeah.
Actually.
Just like,
sadly,
the fact that they brought him out and just like seeing his face, I think like he really was affected.
He hasn't spoken to the media since the season started. How do you even know what his face looks like?
I understand. This is all a highly orchestrated plan. Meyer suspended him for only a half game, got all the outrage. Everybody hates Meyer. Meyer's like, I don't care because I'm the man. And then this way, because after Spikes came out and like suspended himself for the entire game, like, I mean, the national media is just like,
of course they love him.
I love Brandon Spikes.
They still, you know, they still hate on Meyer, but I don't buy this.
Yeah,
at
it
all.
Doesn't matter. Though.
I don't buy this for a second.
Meyer doesn't care if people hate him.
I'm convinced.
He likes it.
I'm convinced Meyer suspended Spikes for the half a game. The public outrage was unbelievable. We'll talk about that a little bit later. So he's like, Brandon, you got to fall on your sword for this one, man. Just sit out the entire game. You know, you can say it was your decision or whatever you want to. It's going to make you seem, you know, seem good and seem right in the public spotlight. But you just got to do this. So he came out and he did it. So that's what I'm convinced happened. But let's talk about the public outcry in the middle of the whole situation before it was moved from a half game suspension to a full game suspension. A lot of like very prominent, a lot on ESPN criticism of Meyer's initial decision.
I'm going to go right at him. I love Mike Golick. I love him. But his calling it, I think it was chicken shit, whatever it was.
I'm not going to censor that because that's what he actually said.
And it was one of the worst things he's ever seen a football player do. Mike Golick admittedly choked people at the bottom of pile. Not accidentally. He reached out. Yeah. He said it. Reached out, grabbed a person's neck, and was just choking him.
Yeah.
I mean, I feel as though threatening someone's life is definitely worse than actually trying to gouge someone's eyes. So the fact that he was so outraged by this is just absurd. And I agree. Orlando Santos, Mike Bianchi, had a little post saying, like, should Mike Golick apologize to Brandon Spikes? And I feel as though he should in this instance.
Go ahead.
Personally, I prefer to be eye gouged than choked.
That's
no,
good.
Actually, I'm going to reverse that. I think I'd rather be choked than eye gouged.
I mean, eye gouged, I don't know. I couldn't handle that.
Yeah, I don't know. I'd probably rather die than be blind. I don't know. But, the situation all kind of seemed a little overblown, like, I don't know. I mean, it got caught on national TV. Like, they couldn't just let it go. Do I think it happens all the time? Sure, probably. Mm-hmm. But it's, like, the same point where it's, like, when there's, like, pushing and shoving after a play and the refs only get the guy who pushes second. It's just, like, you got caught in the limelight. Whatever. Now, it didn't affect my opinion of Brandon Spikes at all. Like, I wasn't like, oh, he's some super dirty player all of a sudden. But, yeah, I mean, he had to be suspended. Whether it was a half – I mean, a half just seems retarded. So, like, just go for a game. You're playing Vandy
exactly.
anyway. Like,
Vanderbilt.
I don't know why he just didn't do that, unless, of course, as I said, it was all a highly orchestrated plan to get Brandon Spike some more media love.
There's no way that was orchestrated. Like, I'm going to say this half-game suspension that everybody is just going to hate on me for. Pat Forte is going to say this is part of Urban Meyer's drive to just win a national championship, no matter what thuggish behavior, quote-unquote, he sees.
He also said that there was no reason that they need Brandon Spike for the Vanderbilt game.
Yeah.
So that it kind of is like, he should have suspended him for the whole game because they don't need him.
Yeah.
But he only suspended him for a half. I mean, it's just kind of like, if they don't need him, then like they won't play him in the second half, really. Like, yeah, it's no big deal that it was only a half to me. I mean, the main reason he got suspended is because he was caught. If TV cameras do not catch him, nothing happens.
And it doesn't.
Even if they see it on their like game film that the TV cameras did not see, they still wouldn't suspend him. They'd say, Brandon, you can't do this anymore.
It wasn't just caught on TV, though. It spread like wildfire on the internet.
Oh, yeah, no. I mean, that was another part of Bianchi's column. Is I believe the headline was, YouTube gouges Brandon Spikes.
Oh, great headline.
Because he blamed it on the internet sensation of YouTube that that everyone could see it, everyone could criticize it. You can watch it in slow motion and see him going in there, digging around, trying to find the eyes. Apparently he's got some bad aim, but I mean
they were closed. He couldn't heal.
All right, I got two things down that avenue there.
Okay.
First is you have to point out that the SEC did approve Meyer's half game punishment.
Exactly.
That kind of fuels the fire of some people who say that the SEC just loves Florida and Alabama and Florida especially, but also fueling down that path is the new, I don't know how you want to classify them, rights provider, the XOS Technologies, who handles SEC's video and like internet video and stuff, has been claiming copyrights on that CBS video somehow because it's like SEC footage or something.
Yeah.
So they're all like coming down. So further possibly fueling the conspiracy theory that's like, take the video down. It never really happened.
I mean, that's just because the SEC's new media policies are a joke and like only one person controls them. In this.
Yeah, I don't know enough. But it seems weird though that they can get it pulled down when it's like, some of the videos I've seen are people like videoing their own TV screen.
That's just YouTube. I can't stand that, but that's unfortunately very popular on YouTube.
I mean, I hate that when I was like, yes, it's the clip I wanted. Yeah. And I get it. I'm like, it's someone's TV. I really don't want to feel it.
It's
I don't
a cell phone video camera of somebody's like 26-inch TV. And it's like, all right.
We should also point out, Ely, the running back, said he didn't think Brandon Spike should be suspended.
At all.
Which, I mean, it's probably he has to say that. But apparently there was talks that he might get in trouble for saying that.
What? I don't think that's true.
I heard talks of that, which would have been ridiculous. But, I mean, he's got to say something. Like, he can't say, like, oh, yeah, Brandon Spike should be out for the season or whatever. But, I mean, I think it kind of says something that the running back is willing to go out and say, like, he shouldn't be suspended.
As the victim of a potential eye gouging. He had to say something. So, I mean, you can't really blame him.
I'm only counting that as one.
Oh.
I mean, you gotta look like a man. Like, well, it doesn't matter.
Can't
like,
be like you can't be like, oh, he's a bad man.
He could have said it was a cheap shot. Dirty. He could have said something where it was like, I'm not talking about it, or like, you know. Yeah.
No comment was the
something,
easiest
way. Anything like that. Anything that didn't make it seem as though he was okay with it. Because, I mean, it's not like people have never called out other players for dirty moves. They call out each other for dirty moves all the time. So the fact that he was unwilling to kind of says like something about what like people players actually think of this.
I just gotta think in the Florida Georgia rivalry, especially, or any SEC rivalry or anything against Florida, you don't give them more fuel. Like, so you're not gonna go out and call like their star linebacker a dirty player or whatever. I approve of the way he did it. I think a no comment would have been best, but I'm fine with what he did.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know. I just assume kind of he's going to say that. Players don't actually kind of don't like to no comment a lot. Seems, you know, like, I don't like they'll like BS their way out of something, but like they don't literally go like no comment very often. Although this week it was kind of interesting. No player, Florida player, pretty much none of them really wanted to talk about like what happens in piles and what's the worst thing that's happened to them. Like, it's like this like unspoken thing.
Oh, I mean, it's dirty down in piles.
Sure.
I mean, I'll admit it, I was a dirty player in high school. If I could grab someone's ankle, I went for it. I mean, It was just if you're in a pile and you were trying to fight for the ball, whatever it was, you had a chance to maybe do a little damage to the best player, you went for it. I mean, it was...
It's outrageous.
No one's going to
Bobby
see it.
Dirty
right.
Play Clovey here.
I mean, you know, some male body regions that shouldn't be grabbed were often grabbed at piles. I had it a couple of times.
Oh, no.
I mean, one of the worst experiences I've ever had is when I hurt my shoulder.
Yeah.
Actually trying to take a cheap shot on somebody. I mean, I succeeded, the end result was a pretty humorous situation. He needed medical, or like he was on the ground, and like the trainers came out for him, and I of course needed a trainer to come out check on my shoulder. It was pretty embarrassing. Then they asked how'd you hurt your shoulder, and I'd explain. I was trying to chop block, and I mean, the chop block wasn't the dirty part. It was where I was trying to chop block.
Yeah.
That was the dirty part.
The thing I can't stand has been, like, some people in the national media, as this has played out all week, have, like, seemingly tried to draw a parallel between Brandon Spike's eye gouging and LeGarrette Blount's punch.
Oh, that's unbelievable.
After the first game of the season.
That's unbelievable.
And I was like, this is the most outrageous thing I've ever seen.
LeGarrette Blount punched the dude and, like, threatened fans after the game. Brandon Spike's tried to eye gouge one guy in the middle of a pile. Or, you know, stuff like that probably
happens
all the time.
That was the other big problem. I wasn't in the pile.
Well,
he was
like
on
outside.
Yeah. That's the key rule.
Yeah.
Is that you have to actually be in the pile. You can't be the last guy on the pile because you're the most visible.
Yeah, that's
a ref can see. If you're down in the pile, no one sees what you're doing. That was Brandon Spikes needs to learn his pile etiquette.
Yeah, well, I mean, it seems like from all I heard, I didn't hear the audio in the press box, but it seems like the broadcasters didn't really make –
no.
Any big deal. Like, it was
caught on camera, but
they just...
thrown on the play.
But, like, they didn't even, like, talk about it during the game. It, like, caught on fire after the game.
Yeah, which is the whole Twitter, YouTube sensation thing.
I love it.
Yep.
Social media, baby. All that eye gouging.
But speaking of refs not seeing things, let's talk about Urban Meyer, his recent comments that, you know, may or may not have happened with anything. Urban Meyer talking about the Tim Tebow getting hit after the play,
yeah,
I believe.
You talked about the SEC, you know, loving Florida, not willing to, you know, punish them or anything. This, to me, is worse than anyone who's upset that they're okay with a half-game suspension.
I agree.
Because just last week, after, you know, I think it was Lane Kiffin, Bobby Petrino, and Dan Mullen all criticized the refs, and they reprimanded them. They said, "You don't do that, mister." And the SEC's like, all right, they're not taking this seriously.
Yeah.
We got to do something bigger. That's it. Like, if you say anything negative about the refs, you critically, you know, you go out and publicly criticize them. You know, it's either suspension or fine. Meyer says, I don't care what you're going to say. I don't care about this punishment. I'm saying it anyways, which is what I feel as though he did. He said, I don't care about what it is.
Mm.
And he just went after it. And apparently, SEC has not contacted him at all about it, he says. So, do they just, like, Urban, stop.
Yeah, look the other way.
We didn't hear him say it. I mean, I don't know what you're talking about. That, to me, is worse.
Right.
I mean, I'm surprised Lane Kiffin has not said anything about the SEC not doing anything to Urban Meyer.
I think he did, actually.
He
was talking to media up there in Knoxville, and, you know, they were asking him, just trying to bait him into a comment.
Because,
if you try hard enough, he's going to say something.
Yeah.
So they were like, you know, have you heard anything about this? You know, what do you know? Did what Urban say cross the line? And, you know, he gave some like, well, you know, we're just focusing on our game this week. But then somebody asked him again, and, you know, like little child in a candy store that he was, he had to go like, I got the same memo you guys did. And like that was his subtle way of saying like, yes, he clearly broke the rules.
I mean, he did it last week when someone asked him, do you feel as though you've been treated differently than other coaches in the SEC?
Yeah.
He's like, you know, I don't want to talk about that. I'm done talking about that. He's like, I don't want to get into whether we get treated differently than Alabama, Florida, Urban Meyer, and Nick Saban.
Yeah.
I mean, to me, that was a kind of like, they can do whatever they want, but
exactly.
Us over here in Tennessee, we can't do anything.
Here, exactly, actually, is what Urban said on Wednesday's SEC teleconference. Ironically, he said it on the conference teleconference, which is just great. Quote.
Flaunting the rules.
The question was about whether or not the SEC told him anything about if he sent in that play. The play was Georgia linebacker Nick Williams hit Tim Tebow after Tebow had handed the ball off to Demps, like, but several seconds afterwards. It actually looks really bad on video.
No, it's terrible.
It was really weird because when I saw it live, I was like, oh, that kind of looked bad. And a reporter, I think it was Kyle, was sitting next to me, and he was like, no, like, I mean, it, like, it was an option play, and, like, you know, it's clean if it's close after. But when you look back at the video, it is not close after. He just, like, and it's from Tebow's blind side. He was just like, he just looks at him afterwards, like, what are you doing? But Urban said, quote, I'm not sure I'm allowed to give you that, what they said. I don't want to step out of line. Once again, I've always had great confidence in that should have been a penalty, in my opinion. Obviously, it should have been. You've got to protect quarterbacks. That's the whole purpose. It's right in front of the referee. But once again, I have great. I'm not sure how they're going to handle that, but we do send it in, and that was one of the plays we did send in.
What was he this trying is, to say?
I,
when he,
I mean, he says it when he respect. Says it's right in front of the right
yeah,
in front
that's
of
the
referees.
Worst.
That's what he was saying.
Yeah.
That's what he was getting at. Said that it should have been a penalty. Right in front of them. They have to see that. And then, like, but I have great respect for them. They do a great job. That's kind of like saying, I'm sorry for what I did, but I'll do it again.
Yeah.
Like, it's not an apology. It's not, he's not saying, like, I have great respect for them by saying that they
should
be
trying to avoid it.
I'd argue it was like when somebody says, no offense, but you're stupid. It's like, no offense. You know, I love the refs, but they really keep screwing
this
up.
I actually prefer when, I mean, he started it with, I have great respect. I prefer when they insult you, then say, no offense. Because it's like, you already offended me.
Exactly.
You can't take that back. I mean, I you know, I somewhat think that you meant that you didn't mean to offend me, but it's too late. You already did.
All right, so what will be a fair punishment for what he said, and what is actually going to happen?
I mean, I think he should be, or he will be fined.
Yeah.
I kind of want a suspension for him.
You're
just because,
Bob. You're
I know,
outrageous.
But just because of how it happened, the ruling just came down, and he just follows the rules. Yeah, he
first
does whatever
of
he
all,
wants. You set an example with him.
He's a first-time offender.
I don't care.
So they changed the rule, but, like, you have to still take his, like, pass into a degree here. It would be the most absurd thing ever. I would write, like, 1,000 words protesting an arbitrary suspension. That would be the most outrageous overreaction, overcorrection. It would be Mike Sly saying, I'm so worried about people saying that I favored Florida that I'm just going to go to the extreme degree in the opposite direction.
Suspend
him?
Season.
Oh, this would be outrageous. Like, he needs
suspension.
To be, like,
never be able to coach again.
Yeah, it's a public reprimand before last week. Now they put in that policy, so it's a fine. I don't know. I don't know what the, like, if they set a normal fine structure. I put it about $25,000, probably worthy of that. I mean, yeah, the worst part is, like, it should, you know, he said it should have been a penalty. That's criticism. And then it's right in front of the referee.
Yeah.
So
it's kind
of
blatant,
I mean,
making this seem dumb.
Wanna, I don't know why we didn't ask. I feel foolish for not asking.
What?
But we should have asked, were you aware of the rule change? Like,
he wouldn't
like,
I mean, he would have given some stupid answer.
Oh, yeah. But that's my favorite part of it, is when he does give us those answers. But no, I mean,
probably would have told us he got the memo.
Yeah. Oh, I got the same memo you got. Oh, that would have been great if he said exactly what Lane Kiffin said. Oh, man, that would have been a great moment.
I hear we all got the same memo.
Yeah, I hear
I got a different memo.
That's exactly what he said. That's exactly
my
what
he
said.
My memo said, I can do whatever I want.
I'm from Florida,
yeah.
Urban's like, nope, no memo made its way here.
All right, well, let's shift gears here. Let's talk about the Vanderbilt game this Saturday.
Going to be an instant classic, Barry.
Yep. I mean, I think the same that we joked about this before the Arkansas game, and that actually was kind of a classic.
Well,
I'm gonna say
no, actually, if everyone listens to the astute Phil on the Hill before the season said Arkansas would be the closest game. Closest game of the season.
Let's point out that Bobby, one better than him, he said Arkansas and Mississippi State would be close games.
Wow. Nice job, Bob.
Good job,
Bob. Shit that for me.
All right. Well, since you're so astute and good at predicting, what's happening in Vanderbilt this weekend?
Also, very torn by Arkansas, if you remember. My prediction might have been a UF blowout, but I also said that Ryan Mallett would score 2 touchdowns. Then went back and said they can't score 2 touchdowns. I said, I think Arkansas could win this game, and I still picked the flag. I was so torn. I don't know what I was doing that game.
He had a lot going on inside.
Well, Vandy's bad. I'll start off with that.
No, you don't say, Bob.
Perennial powerhouse Vanderbilt.
There's plenty of stats right here showing how bad they are, but all you really need to know, they lost to Army. Army.
Yeah.
The Black Knights, baby. You can't handle the Black Knights.
Plenty of teams can handle the Black Knights. Vandy apparently cannot.
Vandy
and
does not have an
if
SEC
things
run.
Are even no. Things look even better for them right now. They starting quarterback done. They have to throw in McKenzie Adams, who has had great success against Florida. Let me point this out to you. In 2005, when he was redshirted, he was voted the Offensive Scout of the Week after the Florida game. In 2006, when he was the starting holder, he was the Specialist of the Week after the Florida game. This is when he actually does have some success. Yeah. In 2007, he scored 2 touchdowns against UF, and last year, he started. I won't say what he did, but he started, and he'll get a second start this year.
Mm. Well, I will point out that Vanderbilt is averaging 10 points per game in SEC contests.
Oh, no.
And that on October 17th, they lost at home to Georgia by 24 points. So if you use that handy-dandy transitive theory, that would mean that the Gators are going to win by a lot of points.
Those 10 points a game is good for last in the SEC in scoring offense. No. Even better is, though, they're pretty good at stopping the pass. They're third. That's their best SEC ranking. Wow. But, unfortunately, 11th in Russian defense against the best Russian team in the conference.
I think that's because teams just score a lot and then they just run the ball.
Well, that's
giving up 190 true. Yards a game. 190!
Floor's averaging, like, 250.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah.
Yeah, big game for Jeff Demps. I'll go ahead and say it. I mean, he breaks
big game
at least.
For everybody.
Well, yeah.
Well, you got to worry about the balance.
Obviously.
The tender mix.
Yeah.
You got to be concerned about the offensive balance.
I'm going to say Jeff Demps breaks, like, one extremely long run, and it's, like, it's very impressive.
Does he break his neck afterwards?
No.
No, okay.
Why?
My big concern is that Chris Rainey is playing.
Yeah.
Or is expected to play, I'll say that.
I think he doesn't play, for the record.
You don't think he'll play? I hope he doesn't play. just because he has a shoulder injury. And he's practiced all week, but non-contact. He's not taking a hit to that shoulder.
Yeah.
I mean, that's... Trust me, like, I had a shoulder injury. It's no fun. Like, the worst part was I had no trouble running.
Yeah.
I can move my arm freely even when it was torn. But as soon as someone hit it the wrong way, it hurt. Yeah. I had to come out of a couple games because of the shoulder. I had to get it wrapped or whatever just because of how bad it hurt when it got hit. Yeah. I don't know how you throw him out there and all he's going to do is take hits repeatedly to his shoulder.
Yeah.
That's what you want to do as a running back to lessen the blow, is lower your shoulder. That way you force them to take some of it. But every time he does that, he's going to be hurting himself.
Don't worry, Bob. They never run the dive play either.
No, I was going to say, it doesn't matter how bad Vanderbilt's rushing defense is. He is going to get tackled out there. So, you know.
Nope. No tackle. He's going to run untouched.
That is the one way he can stay healthy, is he never got touched.
He just runs up and down.
Yeah.
Oh, man.
5 rushes, each 80 yards.
I mean, that's motivation, I'd say. So, I don't know. I think he'll play, and I think he possibly steps out after 2 or 3 plays because his shoulder's going to be feeling it. But big week for Jeff Demps. Big week for Emmanuel Moody. Anybody? When did we start doing that?
I don't know. But me and Phil, I planned to do it, and then as I was doing it, I realized Phil was also doing it, which made it better. I mean, you should have joined in.
Time for everything, Barry.
That was something y'all do when the football writers talk.
No. It's what the fans do.
We just clicked right there.
I'm out among the people. You got to remember it. It still annoys me because they started doing it for Riley Cooper recently. That's my least favorite. I can't stand that.
I hate all of them. It's really obnoxious to me.
Yeah.
And it never fails that a commentator's going to go, well, they're not booing out there. They're saying moo for Emmanuel Moody. They always say that at least once a game. I can't stand it. Go ahead, Bob.
The one thing, other than their decent pass defense they've got going for them, is the freshman running back, Warren Norman.
Yeah.
He's also the kick returner, has 3 kick returns. I think he might actually – Do you have stats up?
I think he might be leading
the SEC in all-purpose yards with kick return and rushing yards combined. He has 533 rushing yards and a 5.7 average. So, I mean, he's good.
Yeah.
But
he's the backup running back, though, right?
Unfortunately,
he
starts?
Yeah, he starts now. He will be
Who
going
would Vanderbilt
up,
start over him?
he wasn't the start at the beginning
Stacey
of the year, though.
He's not bad as well as the other running back. He's got 389 yards, 4.7 average. So he's not bad, but they're going up against UF's defense, which is, you know, obviously going to hurt them.
Yeah, I mean, Warren Storm and Norman, as I'll be calling him for the entire week.
He is indeed leading the conference in all-purpose yards.
He has three kick return touchdowns.
Nation.
That's very impressive. I mean,
he's good.
The problem for his sake is that what he's very good at, Florida is great at, in terms of having a fat, like being fast out of the backfield, Florida's linebackers and secondary will not let him get past them. And the, you know, special teams, Florida, as much as, you know, Urban talks about that, and we say, oh yeah, Urban special teams great. Like, it really is good.
No,
and they're,
no,
they're not,
it's
gonna,
really good.
He's not gonna break one.
I mean,
I mean, they watched an extra day of film for this guy.
Really? Yeah.
They watched 2 days of
and
film.
AJ well, Green.
I mean, in all fairness, there's no one else to watch film on Vanderbilt.
Yeah, you're
he's
not,
the only guy.
Yeah, you're not watching film on Mackenzie Adams.
I mean, also, you should be. You better watch out.
You mean number 9, of course.
Oh, yeah, quarterback number 9.
That might be my favorite thing Urban does. Is he likes to address the opponent players as their number.
Yeah.
And this week, he was talking about the quarterback. He said number 9. And one of the writers said, Adams? As they give it to him, he's like, yeah, number 9. He was not taking the bait. He did not want
nine.
A name. He's number 9, oh, and that's it. The only person I think I've heard him mentioned by name this whole season is A.J. Green.
Yeah.
Not once was he called by his number. He's always referred as A.J. Green, which I think kind of shows like some respect towards A.J. Green, is that he's not a number. He's a name.
Yeah, certainly. But
there seems as though there's some players on UF's team that are still just numbers.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. All right, let's talk about what to expect out of Florida in the Vanderbilt game.
A lot of scoring.
A lot of success. A lot of scoring. Does the offense...
I predict the Florida win.
Oh, that's bold of you, Phil.
Yeah.
Save it for the Gator guarantees.
They're only 5 touchdown favorites.
That's true. Yeah. Does the offensive success from Georgia carry over to this game? Vanderbilt's pass defense is a little better.
I mean, I think Florida would have success against Vanderbilt no matter what. I would equate this to like when they played Kentucky. Mm. Like, it's like... Well, again, and I also believe beating up Georgia's defense also means nothing because Georgia's defense is awful.
Yeah.
So, I mean, I think they'll put up 40 points again, and again, that proves nothing to me.
I mean, Vandy has played close with Florida in, you know, years past, especially recent history, but they've had more going for them for those teams. So I don't want it to seem like, oh, like, well, you know, Vandy can play UF close.
Yeah.
They could, not this year. When they had Jay Cutler... They were able to. When they had, what was the one receiver's name? I can't think of it right now. He had his own webpage. Earl Bennett. There
his
we
own
go.
Webpage.
My name is EarlBennett.com. Yeah, no, he was good. He was real good.
Yeah.
But they had players who could do a lot of stuff, and right now they only have a freshman running back slash kick returner.
Yeah.
So I can't see Vandy doing anything against UF. And they're going to go nuts.
Mm. Let's talk more specific about Florida, though, Bob. Something you wrote a column
about. Oh, the cornerbacks.
Oh, well, no, I was going to go with your column.
Oh, the column.
First.
Oh, sorry. Column, not cornerbacks.
Yeah.
The
column about the wrinkles that Florida's added that have been ultimately useless.
Talk about ironing out the wrinkles, Bob.
Yeah.
They threw in a couple wrinkles this year. The bonsai package. See, we need McCall.
Yeah.
He does it
Phil's
well.
Not going to do it, and I can't.
Know.
So.
Well, yeah, they wanted the whole no huddle. It was going to be fun. It was going to be explosive. They're going to change the pace of the game.
Yeah.
they did change the pace of the game. They slowed it down by running the no huddle because all it did
amazingly.
Was everyone rushed to the line in a frenzy, make sure they get to the line, and then stood there and turned toward the sideline up until like the clock was winding down to get off the play.
One of the most infuriating things to watch.
All they had to do a couple times is snap it quick to keep things off balance, but they seemingly refused.
I mean, I don't know if they just didn't do it or if they didn't want to do this because it might be too confusing, but they could have. What I'm saying is they could have said, all right, after this play, we're going into the bonsai.
Yeah.
We're going to give you 2 plays.
Yeah.
Right?
Like every other no huddle.
When we get to the line, you were running that second play.
Yeah.
Do they not do that? Or do they like, no, we want to make sure this play's good.
Yeah. Well, they did it like a couple times in early games. And again, like it was Charleston Southern and Troy, so it doesn't really matter. But and they might have tried it once in like an SEC contest. It seemingly worked great every time. Like, it was like, oh, we're going to run up the line, hand off the ball to Jeff Demps. Jeff Demps just make people miss because he is so dirty.
Yeah.
And then, like, nope, that worked too well. Let's stop. Let's run 100 more dive plays and wait for the play clock to hit 0.
There was one play, I can't remember. I want to say it was against Tennessee, maybe someone else. It wasn't Troy. It was the second game they ran. They snapped the ball from the from the bonsai when the defense was huddled 5 yards
away
from the ball,
but
unfortunately Jeff Demps, like there was a bad snap or bad handoff, and the ball was dropped.
Yeah,
that is effective. Is when you snap the ball when the other defense is in the huddle.
They don't like that, Bob.
Yeah, I don't understand why they were just so ineffective with
it. You want to tire out the defense. You want to make sure they can't get the substitutions they need in. You want to keep them off balance on the line, And all they did was just let him do whatever they, like, all right, well, we see you're standing there. We'll make our adjustments while you're doing nothing. And it got to the point where it was out against Georgia.
Yeah.
I guess they want to simplify things a little bit.
Simplified so much they go to the I-form.
Yes.
The simplest of packages.
Yes.
So
I was a big proponent that it was not going to make the field.
Yeah.
And it looks like it might be making the field in that type of role. Mm. I don't see it being used outside of the red zone.
No.
But I think they'll bring it into the red zone to kind of change the pace. And, you know, when everyone's used to these spreads, probably going to have three cornerbacks on the field. They'll run the eye, pound it for, like, you know, 8-yard game, and spread them out again real quick.
Yeah.
Maybe do two plays in a row like they did this week, so the team's, like, tricked into bringing a linebacker onto the field and then spread them out, which would be useful. But I still can't see it catching on and them using it all the way down the field. And I'm still not completely sold that they're going to use it all the time, but I do now. I'll say that they'll probably throw it in there a couple of times each game.
All right, and the other wrinkle that didn't quite last is the Joker package.
Oh, the Joker package. I was a fan of. I thought it was going to work, but the big flaw was apparently they didn't stress run stopping enough from it.
I knew we forgot something.
Yeah.
Guys, stop the run.
They had Justin Tratto, a defensive end, as the nose guard, which is good. It's going to work when he's pass rushing, but he's got to have kind of like, in order to, he can't, defensive tackles, what they need to do is they usually need to just bowl their way into the quarterback, use the move once they have like someone engaged. They can't really start doing moves like defensive ends do right off the ball. So he's probably going to be pass rushing every single time out of that, which means he's not trying to get in contact with the line, which means they can just move from wherever they want when they're run blocking. And it's just not, it just didn't work against the run. And when it's third and long, this is an important team, is when it's third and long, teams kind of don't want to throw the ball. They don't want to risk an interception.
Yeah.
So they'll just run it, and the defense was getting hurt by these long runs that teams are breaking off on third down because they had a package in that can't stop the run.
Right. That's really the problem. It's like, you are so talented. And I mean, it's just like, why would you? You know, it's like, you always see UF, they love to get their Joker package out on the field when it's like 3rd and 12 and you see Justin Tratto run out there. But one thing about what you just said, Bob, it seemed like, I mean, there's issues because it's definitely a pass heavy defense. Yeah. You know, it's designed to stop the pass. But it seemed like all the runs on 3rd and long that went really long were on the outside.
Well, I mean, once you also have, you know, obviously if you only have 3 down linemen, you're going to have more linemen free to get to that, to the second level.
Yeah.
So it's easier to move them. It's easier in general just to block when you don't have as many people right in front of you that's like trying to get penetration. I think this defense could work if you maybe throw in a defensive tackle every once, like a true defensive tackle.
Omar Hunter.
Yeah, someone like that that can just like be a big body and at least take up maybe 2 defenders.
Yeah.
Also, what if they want Justin Tratto in pass rushing situations, 3rd and long, it wouldn't be a bad idea to put him in as you know, one of the defense tackle, but still be 4 down linemen. That way you have your 3 good defensive, good defensive ends on the field to pass rush, but you still have enough people there that it's going to be able to stop the run.
Then it's not the Joker package, Bob. The other thing that seemingly would kind of hurt this point is it always seemed like on those 3rd and long runs, I have like a couple that are coming up in my mind, Tennessee definitely and like an Arkansas one. It seemed like they also coincidentally, those plays also had a lot of missed tackles. Like, I know those aren't related. It's like when a running back would get to like the secondary, like they just, a secondary player like a corner or one of the safeties would always miss a tackle, possibly 2. So it, like, a 10-yard run turned into, like, 20, or an 8-yard run turned into, like, 16. So the Joker really kind of gets a little bit of a bad rap. Like, it's not very, I don't think it isn't, I mean, it hasn't been good against the run. But they seem to just miss tackles a lot on those plays, too. Yeah. I don't know.
I mean, it could be them being out of position. I don't know if they're focused so much on the pass that the run, they're not ready for it.
I mean, awesome. I saw Mob like it run over.
I mean, Will Hill missed like 4 tackles in the beginning, in the first game. It's unbelievable. I don't know.
The Giants did this thing a couple years ago, and it was very crazy and almost impossible to stop. Where when Strahan's last year, they had Strahan, OC, Matthias Kiwanuka, and Justin Tuck, all great defensive ends. And on 3rd and long, they put all 4 on the field. And just rushed, and like sometimes none of them were in a 3-point stance. They were all standing up, so you had no clue where they were coming from.
Yeah.
And it just disrupt. Like, they never needed a blitz because they could disrupt anyone they wanted with just those four guys.
Yeah, I don't know who Florida would put as their fourth
Duke Clemmons,
guy.
Of course. Come on,
Duke Clemmons.
Obviously,
I like Willie.
Might
Green.
Not have the same.
I don't think Willie Green's at the point where
enough.
He is. Yeah, that's the problem.
Outside.
He's still. He's much bigger than he looked last year. He looked he looked like a little pole last year. I mean, this year he's got some. He's got a couple bumps in him, but. I think he could be a good defense end in the future.
All right, well, let's wrap up the Vanderbilt preview with some score predictions, as per usual. Bob, what you got?
Well, I picked UF to cover the spread, and now thinking of what I have to pick as a score, I don't feel good about it, but yeah. I'm sticking to it. I'm going to go 44-3 UF.
44-3.
Just in case anyone was concerned that I was going to pick Vandy.
This is going to be the game where, like, Florida continues to explode offensively and everybody just assumes everything's fixed, even though it's not. Florida will win 56.
Wow. Oh, man.
To 10.
The touchdown
will be given up on the Scrubs. You figure, like, Florida's starting defense won't play more than 2.5 to 3 quarters.
I don't even know about that because I feel like when the defense knows, all right, the offense is rolling. This team is terrible.
It's like against
Georgia.
That's a good point.
And they gave up 17 points to Georgia.
Yeah,
I do not think that's going to happen
game. But Georgia's offense is better than Vandy's.
Well, yeah. But I'm saying once you relax to that point, yeah.
a lot better.
All right. Well, that's why I'm going to say the score will be 41-6. You got to get your 2 Caleb Sturgis field goals in there. 5 touchdowns. 2 Caleb Sturgis field goals.
1 Caleb Sturgis miss.
I got a men right now. I got to have a field goal. So I'll go 59-10.
59-10.
I'm going to say Caleb Sturgis. I'll save this. I'll save it for a guarantee.
All right. Looking forward to it.
All right.
Okay. Let's go over our weekly Heisman watch, who we think is currently in the lead for the trophy. I guess who we would give it to if it was given out today. I'll start with mine, then we'll go to Bobby and Phil, and then the composite Alligator Sports one, which is the official Heisman watch.
Of Alligator Sports.
Of the world. All right, I'm going to say first is Boise State quarterback Kellen Moore.
Couldn't disagree more. Yeah.
Couldn't be more wrong than Phil.
Yep. Get it?
I see what you did there, Phil. Second is going to be Mark Ingram, Alabama running back. Third is Jimmy Clausen, Notre Dame quarterback. Fourth, back on my list, Florida quarterback Tim Tebow. And fifth, as ever, is Jacquizz Rodgers. So I feel pretty confident about that list, Bob.
Yeah, it's unfortunate that the actual voters don't see it our way. Kellen Moore's getting very little love.
Yeah.
But he's number one on mine. then I go
it's
to
two
my,
people right in this room.
Then I go to my boy over in Houston, Case Keenum.
Ew.
He's just putting up huge numbers, huge numbers. Number three, Golden Tate, touchdown run out of the Wildcat was absolutely disgusting this week.
Plays for the Irish, of course he is.
Who's four, Bob?
We got Quiz, and fifth is Teebs. He snuck back on, but I still don't trust him all the way.
I think he's
probably actually number one.
Yeah,
in the
national spotlight.
I don't trust him.
I think from here on out, though, he just goes nuts. Like, his toughest games are behind him, except for the SEC championship game, and he's going to do something gritty in that. So he's going to win it based on something he does in, like, another jump pass or something, and he's just going to destroy the rest of the defenses he played, except maybe FSU. I don't know. Phil, what's yours?
No. FSU's good on offense. They are terrible on defense. He just gave up, like, almost 50 points to NC State.
But you got to think, this is going to be emotional. Yeah. This is Mickey Andrews' last game against
and
Florida.
And it's Tim Tebow's last game in the swamp.
I don't care.
The last one.
He'll be crying so much.
He's going to play till the end of the game. He's going to score 10 touchdowns by himself.
10 touchdowns? Oh,
by himself.
God. All right, Phil, what's your Heisman watch?
Well, first I have a funny thing to say about Case Keenum. The associate funny athletics thing. Director of the University of Houston sent out this email this week to, I think it was like all the members of like the Football Writers Association of America or something. I got this email, and it was the greatest subject line ever. It was a case for Heisman.
Oh no!
Nice, I like it.
Yeah, I see what they did there.
Oh man, that was classic.
All right,
my Heisman watcher. Don't really feel super great about this. Number one, Jimmy Clausen, Notre Dame. I don't feel good about him in the one spot, although I like his stats this year, which he had a good win.
Number two, Kellen Moore, Boise State, who's barely holding on to that number two slot because he plays no good defense other than Oregon.
Because he's creeping up to the number one spot. That's why he's barely holding on to number two.
No, he's falling down soon. As soon as number three, Tim Tebow, has another great game, which I expect this week. Number four, an odd pick, but maybe I was just drinking the Kool-Aid. I can't get enough.
Phil was drinking the NyQuil.
LaMichael James of Oregon, who was just dominated the last weeks and just ran all over USC.
Yeah.
Just ran.
That's bold of you.
And then number five is Golden Tate, Notre Dame wide receiver, who was really hurt because I can't put him over Jimmy Clausen because Clausen's been great. Tate has also been great, but it's really hard to have like two great people from the same team. It's like the Tebow Harbin thing.
Yeah, it's the Tebow Harbin.
It hurts everyone there.
All right, what's our composite alligator
sports list?
Composite
is Kellen Moore at 16 points, Jimmy Clausen 11 points, Mark Ingram 9 points, Tim Tebow 7 points, Jaquizz Rodgers 5 points.
I feel very good about that list, if only because it's fairly close to mine, despite the fact that I do not vote in this poll.
Yeah.
So, good job, football writers.
The like, national media consensus is kind of Tebow, Ingram 1 and 2,
yeah,
and then maybe Kellen Moore.
Right now, ESPN's experts poll has Ingram, Tebow, Jimmy Clausen, Colt McCoy, Case Keenum. Note Case Keenum ahead of Kellen Moore, folks.
That's outrageous.
Also, CJ Spiller
is ahead like Spiller.
Of Golden Tate, Jaquizz Rodgers, and your boy, the Michael James.
No, he's making an appearance on the poll, though. He got one fifth-place vote, Phil, from the ESPN experts poll.
Yeah, well, from a poll of actual Heisman voters, the Scripps Howard Heisman poll, this one goes... they take, I think it's like two or three voters from each region, so it's supposed to be kind of representative of the big thing.
Sure.
Tebow 1, Ingram 2, Keenum 3.
Give me that Keenum!
Clausen 4, Colt McCoy returns at number 5.
Wow.
No Kellen Moore love there.
Did Colt McCoy get any votes in our poll?
I don't. Colt
McCoy, he got one by Mike McCall.
Mike McCall voted, yeah. Kellen Moore, by the way, has two total points in this... in this Scripps Howard poll, where like Tebow's leading with 35.
That's a crime, and it's a sham, and Kellen I won't stand
Moore,
for it.
Kellen Moore is behind the top five, and then Fresno State running back Ryan Matthews, Cincy quarterback Tony Pike, and Oregon quarterback Jeremiah Mazzoli.
What?
He is only 1 point in front of TCU defensive end Jerry Hughes.
Oh, Jerry Hughes for Heisman. Get the campaign going, boys.
All right, enjoy that, Bob.
Enjoy.
All right, let's round the show out quickly with our Gator guarantees. Phil, you always go last and steal ours, so I'm going to give you the chance to go first this week.
Apparently, my name's Adam Berry, and I make false statements, but I am guaranteeing Florida will rush for 300 yards in this game.
300 yards?
Yep.
All right, Vanderbilt's rushing.
As a team.
No. Yep, that's why you said Florida.
One player.
The state of Florida will rush. No,
all of the teams of Florida.
All right, Bob.
Well, right now all I've got, unfortunately, is that there'll be another 50-yard field goal by Caleb Sturgis.
You don't want to go any bigger than that?
I mean, I would love to go bigger.
You want to go 55 or longer? I'm going to try to bait you into this.
No, I mean, I know you are. Okay. I'm going to stick with 50, although I would love to see him set up for a 65-yarder. Yeah. I think he's got the leg. I want to see it. Herb, make it happen.
Herb.
65, let's do it.
All right, and I'm going to give possibly the most crazy Gator guarantee we've given on this show
ever,
and because what I'm about to say here,
Alligator Sports Podcast history.
We've had 64 shows.
What?
This might be the craziest. David Nelson will score a touchdown in the Vanderbilt game.
No,
wide receiver, Florida wide receiver.
Are you even trying?
David
Are
Nelson
you even trying?
Will score a touchdown.
Let me cap it off because I'm big and I do more than one. I got Brandon James.
This is exactly
giving a return
what I was talking
touchdown.
About. This is exactly what I was talking about.
How does that jump on what anybody just said?
Because I just said something, and then you took it and spun it your way and gave one.
How is that related to Brandon James scoring a return touchdown? That's completely unrelated.
So you giving another one, though.
Yeah, of course it is.
That's because you always give several and piggyback off what we say.
That's not piggybacking.
But it's coming after what I said.
That's not piggybacking on what you said.
You it's almost like you want to make a more ridiculous like prediction than him.
It's like, oh, he talked about a wide receiver. I'm going to talk about
a
wide receiver, too.
Oh, my, I don't
I swear
got
if you
one.
Do.
I just would like to point out that you have just way too much confidence in David Nelson.
Oh, I have zero confidence in David Nelson, but I'm saying Vanderbilt's passing defense is so bad.
Third in the SEC.
I like what Phil said
about
Phil said about them not, you know, You can point at that all you want, but that's because Florida's going to score it early. David Nelson is going to be like wide open in the corner of the end zone. Tebow's going to have no choice but to pass it to him.
You are catching him off a good week. He tied his career high in receptions with three. So, I mean, clearly he's on the upswing.
Obviously.
I got one thing to add here. According to Merriam-Webster, the definition of piggyback...
I swear.
The first definition is up on the back and shoulders, and the second is on or as if on the back of another.
As if on. And yeah. I've been carrying you through this since we started this podcast.
Piggybacking, though. Adam, would be if I took what you said and then tweaked it like I said David Nelson would not score, or if I said Deontay Thompson would score, but I made a completely unrelated prediction.
I got a second one. Phil Kegler will not get a Gator guarantee right the entire season. The entire season. Write it down.
At one point, I was keeping track of our records in this. I stopped doing that because it was hard to go back and keep track of. But, Phil, I think you were like 0 for 4 at that point. So
I'm going to stick to it.
Yeah.
Not one right. Get ready for it, Kegs.
Speaking of which, let's revisit the ones we made last week before we round this out. I said that Florida would score a red zone touchdown out of the I form. I was wrong. They did not.
That's a common occurrence for you, Adam.
Yep, Phil. Speaking of wrong, Phil said that Tim Tebow would not break the rushing touchdown record set by Herschel Walker and have three passing touchdowns. Phil, how many of those two things were you right on?
Zero this week.
That's correct. No, yeah, this week. And you all, however, you did say it would be an interception, quote-unquote, party.
Which Florida. I would say it was.
It was. It was a pick party, I would it argue, sure as well. But not actually your guarantee, despite the fact that, once again, you had to get several things in that section. So you were wrong on your guarantee.
I said there was going to be three picks. There was four.
Kyle
three said, happened.
Kyle said that Georgia linebacker Rennie Curran would be involved. I believe he said he would partake in a turnover in the red zone, I want to say. That did not happen. Florida had no turnovers. So 0 for 3 on our Gator guarantees that week. On our score predictions, though, we were... Phil, you did pretty well. Final score is 41-17. You said 31-6.
You said that I did the best out of us, Adam?
You did the best
out of us. I did the best. Okay, thank you.
I said that the score would be 27-3. I was way off, and Kyle said 27-7. Not a great week for us in the score predictions, but in other score predictions, we predicted the hoop score predictions from the Florida-St. Leo game on Monday's podcast.
Really overestimated St. Leo.
Except for Kyle. And McCall very accurately... assess them. The final score was 95-46, actually. I wrote that down wrong there. It was 95-46. I said 94-68. I was mocked. Mocked, I say, for saying that Florida could score 94 points. They scored 95. Kyle said the score would be 77-35. Not so much. And McCall pretty much nailed St. Leo's score. He said the score would be 80-48. So if you combine what me and McCall said, it was a good week for us. But yeah, we'll talk more about Florida basketball come Monday's podcast because they have another exhibition showdown Monday
night. Great news. Just got this in my email inbox.
Yep.
UF men's basketball has announced that there will be a pregame barbecue from 1 to 3 before the season opener.
That's exciting.
Get excited.
Who gets
from
to go?
At Rowdy Town.
Rowdy Town. That's what they're calling the thing outside the student gate.
I
now.
Mean,
yeah.
I'm not going to lie. Rowdy Town. Not so rowdy anymore.
No.
Pre-game barbecue. Well,
that could
that whole winning thing.
Yeah.
That whole winning
free
thing.
Free massages. So oh, this is outrageous.
So was your reaction. All right, that wraps it up for this show. Send any feedback to podcast@alligator.org, especially saying whether or not you think Phil piggybacks off the rest of our Gator guarantees.
And look up the definition of piggyback first, please, or listen to mine.
Check us out on Twitter at twitter.com/alligatorsports, Facebook at facebook.com/alligatorpodcast. We will be back Monday. Thanks for listening.
End the show, Barry.